This is CliffCentral.com. Welcome to Leadership Transformation Platform. Yes, leadership is all about walk, come with me now, and that's why we like that song. I'm Adrian Groenewald. With me, Libby Groenewald and Alice Mnyandu. Welcome, gents.
Welcome, Adrian.
It's nice to be here again, Adrian.
Yeah, it's going to be a packed conversation today. I look forward to it, and we'll welcome our guest in a moment. And the reason this is Leadership Transformation Platform, we changed the name recently because to transform a society, a business, a country, it doesn't matter what, takes leadership. And that's why our first hour of a three-hour show, 12 to 3 p.m., is all about leadership. We call it Leadership Masterclass, and that's what the next hour will be, 12 to 1 p.m. First half hour, we're going to have a conversation about leadership and State of the Nation address. That was, as we've come to know, quite dramatic, and we know who's usually to blame for the drama, but we're going to talk it through. We're going to have a conversation so that we can understand it more. And the big question on my mind is, if you're a leader, a CEO, doesn't matter, executive, a manager, maybe even a junior manager in your own eyes, should you be aware of SORNA? Should you be aware of the impact of it on your environment, on your life, on your little world or big world? So we'll talk about that and much more. And on the panel, we'll add Herman Mashaba, who's now, obviously we know him as a businessman, also a politician. He calls himself a civil servant. So we'll talk to him as well about that. And the second half of the show, our leader interview will be with him. We'll talk to him about what his life is like these days. What is it like being on the campaign trail? From being a businessman to trying to win the hearts of Johannesburg so that he can hopefully make a change here. And then we start our business masterclass from 1 to 2:30. And all the way through, the theme today is vision, mission, values. Those things we so easily roll off our tongues. When you have a business, you must have a vision, a mission, and values, all that stuff. So we're going to make sense of that for the first half hour of our business masterclass with someone from USB, Stellenbosch Business School. And then we zoom in on an interview. We're going to interview an SME owner. In this case, it's going to be a man that you're aware of. His name is Adam Rabinowitz, Chief Imaginator at Imaginate. Interesting business they've got, but he'll tell us more about it. And then, of course, we engage our live SME audience in the studio. They'll be sitting listening. Then we ask them to pitch their businesses and engage the panel. So we look forward to that. Finally, we kick off with Mr. Kope Malatsi. He's a principal of a rural school in Limpopo. And he's won several management and leadership awards. Sounds like a really good success story that we need in our education system. Go to leadershipplatform.com for all things leadership, two P's in the middle. And next up, our Leadership Masterclass. Stay with us.
The Leadership Platform is brought to you by Sibanye Gold, a proudly South African mining company.
At Sibanye Gold, we believe leaders are made, not born. We also believe we can create a sustainable legacy by helping to develop tomorrow's leaders today. Which is why we have partnered with the Leadership Platform to nurture leaders who are committed to growing our country's economy.
We are proud to say it's an initiative that's already showing glittering results. Sibanye Gold, we are one.
CliffCentral.com. Right, Leadership Masterclass. Hopefully you're taking your early lunch, and if not, do it every Monday and listen live. Otherwise, download the podcast or even the app, Cliff Central app, which you could find in all the normal places. Herman Mashaba, no stranger to Cliff Central. You've been on our show, you've been on Gareth's show, you've been all over the place. And this is where you must be seen, I think. This is the future. Good to have you.
Thank you very much, Adrian and the colleagues. Really great. I had a fantastic discussion with Liv 2 weeks ago. And the following day, that's when you got this award, which was really quite fantastic. So always glad to really have being invited here and really have the discussions with you and your team.
Yeah, we're going to have an open discussion. Alice, it's good to have you here, a man who's interested in the economy, who's been editor of the biggest financial daily for 6 years. You've been a journalist in New York. So, I mean, these things just roll off your tongue. It's easy, you know, it's easy for you to understand the state of the nation, all the economic statements that our president made, and then Louis Groenewald, some wisdom, the old man. Last week, a reminder, there's a podcast on it. We debunked some leadership myths. So we had in the studio the CEO of MTN, Teto Nyati, who's taken over for 6-7 months. You can go to leadershipplatform.com, go and read article there on him. Alice, you also wrote something great on LinkedIn. So we, you know, this week though, first half hour, let's talk about the state of the nation, the relevance to leaders. And my first question to you gentlemen is just a simple one, and then we'll dig into the detail. Why should leaders be interested in SORNA? Practically, I'm a manager at SAB or at Standard Bank, or I'm an executive. If I'm the CEO, one can easily explain why you should be quite interested. But if I'm a manager of a bank in Centurion or in Tembisa or whatever business, should I be interested in SORNA, or is it a waste of time for me? I mean, it certainly is fun to watch, and it's like a drama, and it's like a soapy. But in terms of practicalities, Alice?
Yeah, look, I think obviously the red carpet, you know, the fashion show on the red carpet.
Yeah.
No, I'm just kidding. Look, it's supposed to be, you know, a benchmark of sort in terms of how the government's program for the year is going to unfold. That's what the president is said, you know, is supposed to do. But we know that over the last 2 years, last year and this year, obviously you've had more drama than you've had substance. And I think this past week, it's the same thing that we saw.
So only if I'm interested in what government is going to roll out and what their emphasis is going to be, over the next year, should I be interested in SORNA. And I can imagine if I'm a junior manager somewhere, I'm not going to be interested in SORNA necessarily, not for any substantive reason.
Look, in my view, you know, I thought about this last week, that in effect, you know, there's more hype than substance about the SORNA. You know, obviously, you know, you want to hear what the government's program is going to be, but I thought that, you know, if you look at things intrinsically, the president has every other opportunity to say things that we expect him to say in the SORNA. So he could have a speech anywhere. In fact, we would dearly love to have him speak on policy matters and that sort of thing on a consistent basis.
Good point. Herman, your view, I'm a normal manager, should SORNA be of value to me?
Well, in fact, I think for me, SORNA is really so crucial that it's not really something actually to be directed to senior management or CEOs. I think every citizen of a country has to really have interest in the state of the nation address, because it's supposed to be the address to actually really prepare the nation, particularly for the budget and really what people can expect really going forward. I think you really look at our country the last few years, how the economy is performing, unemployment getting out of hand, corruption being the order of the day. You know, people are really depressed. And you expect the state of the nation to really be the platform for the president to bring hope and really give direction to the country. But unfortunately, our president keeps missing an ideal opportunity to really rebuild the pride of South Africans and really give them hope. He uses that as a platform to just really go and just really give a hollow, empty speech, almost really completely empty. So that's unfortunately, it's got nothing to do with the state of the address. It's got to do with the president actually failing to really give hope and sense of direction to the nation.
Louis?
Arjun, agree with what the two wise gentlemen have said. My interest, though, is mainly from a leadership point of view. Now, why I say leadership is that everybody wears a contextual hat. And if you see these things from that, say, a tunnel vision, etc., then you see things in that way. And this has got to be done as well. I'm interested, though, in the total picture. I'm interested in the way that emotional surges follow these things and how we've been swept along the last few months by emotional surges out there. And the extent to which quality leaders will separate themselves and look at the principles and the issues involved. Because of this show, we are primarily interested in essences of good leadership. In other words, what do we do to help move the situation along in a positive direction? This is an inclusive attitude. One of the things I admire about Herman is his spirit of inclusiveness. Now, so I'm saying that I'm interested from a leadership point of view, else we are swept along by whatever surges is topical at that stage in our lives.
I tweeted before, Sona, please, with humility, surprise us, speaking to the president, I guess, by doing something genius, symbolic, even brave today. That's what I tweeted. And then somewhere during Sona, I saw a tweet by you, Alice. It said, leadership, why has it eluded our beloved country? Cry, the beloved country. And that tweet went kind of everywhere. Why did you tweet that? I mean, there's the word leadership is in there, and you felt it eluded us, not just, I guess, during Sona in general, but what was your sentiment there, your feeling?
My sentiment really evolved around the fact that, you know, we've seen greatness in terms of leadership. You know, whether you're talking about, you know, our first, you know, President Nelson Mandela, you know, Archbishop Desmond Tutu, Inkosi Albert Luthuli. I mean, these, you know, heavyweights are not Nobel laureates by coincidence. It's because they've been forged through the crucible that is this country. You know, this country has produced incredible leaders. But to see, you know, the chaos that we saw, I mean, and then have this happen, you know, did any of you notice that even when the chaos had subsided, the president never referred back to what had just transpired?
Not at all. It's like ignore. No. Move on.
So nothing happened. But think of yourself if you walk into your house and, you know, you have your kids, you know, having fist fights. You're definitely going to, you know, be caught up with that before doing anything else. So we just saw the president walk over that issue. Yet it's fundamental. I mean, when you have this discourse in the country, at least acknowledge it, that there's something wrong that's happening here.
It's fascinating because one leader would, when this back and forth conversation is not even a conversation between the speaker and the rest happen, and it's chaos, and it's an hour later, and I'm sitting there, and I really want to speak to my flipping nation, I would think he would rise, despite protocol, and say, okay, let me just take some questions from these guys, because we really need to get over this so that I can talk to my nation. There's none of that. It's like I'm just a pawn. I'm just going to read a speech that someone else wrote for me. I'm just going to do that. It really is. I then said this, Herman, I think you agree. Afterwards, I tweeted this. It also went a bit of a distance. Uninspiring, ordinary Sona 2016 at a time when we desperately need extraordinary, inspiring leadership.
Absolutely.
And that was my overall sentiment. I want us to start getting objective here about some points in Sona in a moment. Let's get the emotion out. That is what I felt. Of course, that's what you felt. But we've got strong objective journalism in here, and we've got DA sentiment, and we've got us.
Well, I think, but you know, Adrian, I'm not really really voicing this from a DA or political perspective. I'm really raising it as a member of civil society, as an ordinary South African concerned about the economic performance we're experiencing right now, high unemployment, the desperation of our people out there. But we look at the fees must fall, that our youth out there, students are unable to really continue with our education. We've got major issues. And yes, and then you have 1 hour interruption of the president's address. And an hour later, he continues as if this never really happened. So I honestly am finding it difficult to really understand the space where President Zuma is. Because definitely it's not in the same space where South Africa is. He's somewhere else. And where's the somewhere else, which I think only him and the ANC can obviously really tell this nation.
Well, we can talk about just this sentiment for in the next 15, 20 minutes. Let's just move on to Sona. What stands out in terms of relevance for leaders? Obviously, he zoomed in on the race issue very quickly, and he spoke of the demon of racism and 21st of March being a day against racism. And that is impactful to a normal leader in corporate, doesn't matter where, because on that day, there should be a focus on racism. In fact, maybe it sends a message from the top that we should really be focusing about this. I guess the letter from Sim Shabalala to his staff at Standard Bank. And leaders must get a message that there's an issue and we've got to deal with it within the the confines of my role as a leader. If I'm the CEO, I must look at it in my business, maybe me and my family and wherever. But that stood out. So he quickly zoomed in on that. Alice, what do you think?
Look, I mean, I thought at the initial go, I mean, the speech really was kind of like ticking boxes of what has been in the current affairs. I mean, we knew how the whole racism debate, you know, got started off. It started on social media, you know, and there were a whole lot of things that emanated from that. It's an important issue, but it's within a myriad of other core problems that our society still faces. And back to the speech, I don't know, I mean, Hammond is raising this point that we just don't know what space the president operates in. But I would say this, I think it would have been good, you know, if the president recognized that that same podium, that's the podium where, you know, Nelson Mandela stood, you know, to accept the reins to take this country in a different direction. That's the same podium where, you know, F.W. de Klerk, you know, said, you know, we're going to do away with, you know, this injustice system that, you know, abrogated responsibility when it came to black people in this country. So there's a lot of inspiration that can still come from that podium. That's the same podium where Thabo Mbeki made that, you know, famous speech, I'm an African, you know. But what is it that is causing, you know, this vacuum in terms of, you know, not having something that would take the country, you know, on to a high? That's what we need to be asking.
Okay, so what he spoke of, quite a few things, the 9-point plan, he touched on the BRICS countries. I think he's trying to, I don't get the impression he's trying to give a bigger picture that says, don't blame me for the financial crisis and the $500 billion damage and this and that. I mean, look at BRICS. Look at two BRICS countries that are currently
Brazil and Russia. You know,
so he was just trying to give us more context. Which, if I think
China,
if you had credibility, then people would listen and say, yeah, okay, you have a good point, President. Maybe it wasn't just your finance minister switch that did the trick, but that worried me. You look at the global economy, and it really is in shambles. And he tried to create that perspective, didn't he? But what stood out for you?
But can I just really come in here, to Andrew, and we really talk about the global economy being in shambles? That's not really true. The country's really showing some fantastic performances out there. I think for me as a South African, really looking at the potential of this economy, having Britain, England, and United States growing faster than us, it's a tragedy.
I mean, on the African continent.
No, I mean, how do you we can really get it to the U.S. economy, such a developed, huge economy, growing at over 2%, and we can't actually even grow at 1%. And, you know, I mean, those have developed economies, very difficult to really do anything dramatic. They're growing at three times better than the South African economy. And you tell me globally the economy is bad. I can assure you, you can only really fool those that have no clue what's really happening out there in the world. I think this country has got the potential to grow at a minimum of 5%. And once you can really have this country growing at 5% plus, this racial undertones that we're seeing, you're not going to see them. We're seeing racial tension. We're seeing the frustrations of South Africa because the ANC is pushing for South Africa to really share a declining cake. And when the cake declines, like it is right now, you can really put any measures against racism, you're going to have issues.
I agree.
It's not going to be, if it's not racism, it's going to be something else, because you have society that is trying to really share a cake that is declining. Let this country grow at 5%. I can assure you, you'll really see South Africans really being excited again, really being looking forward to waking up, going to work, and taking care of their families. And I think the reason why this economy is failing is because of the poor administration of Zuma and the ANC. And I think they've got to take the responsibility that they are mismanaging this economy. It's got nothing to do with international developments. Yes, so we operate in a global space, no one denies that. But at the end of the day, you know what? South Africans we have the responsibility to ensure that our own economy performs. I'm not going to really starve my kids because I'm managing my own family badly, and then I said, look, next door is there's chaos. No, I think we have the responsibility to really look at South Africa and really give South Africa the priority.
Great.
And really, yeah, and great grow like no.
Yeah.
But also the very important thing that has been mentioned is this 5%, because the president then, during the course of the speech, actually said that 5% is no longer attainable. So what does that mean about the ideals of the NDP? I mean, that just says, you know, where we are looking forward, 2030, you know, it might well be a pipe dream. Because, again, I mean, this is something I've written about before, that South Africa as a tiny economy, of which it is, in the grand scheme of things, we have to be careful to make sure that we have a safety buffer if indeed there happens to be dislocations in the global economy, which so far, you know, we're seeing signs of that, but we're not there yet. So what that means is that when the dislocation finally happens, you know, we're going to be hurt much, much more than anybody.
Yeah, good point. There's no buffer.
Arjun, we mustn't underestimate what we're saying here. It's very important to understand from a leadership point of view. The pattern we've discovered over the years in interviewing literally hundreds of top quality performers everywhere, they have one single attribute they seem to share, is the ability to fashion confidence in the environment. They make their own environment. Now, what we're saying here is that our government, and this is something I'm very much voted ANC last time, there's a lot of good in them. I may still do it. I'll see about that. But the fact is, a message is coming out there that the government doesn't believe it can be done. Now, this concerns me greatly from a leadership point of view. They don't believe we can get the 5%. You see, this is what concerns me. So they speak like a political party with a lot of things on the go, tremendous lot of initiatives. But I don't see the belief there, and not followed by the actions that we can do it. And this getting back to what Herman was saying, and Ella's backing up, from a leadership point of view, that concerns me as well. I listened the next day, Arjun, to our session at TV West before in Cape Town. Very good audience and a lot of participation. I was impressed with the way he handled it as a state president. But when he put on his hat as an ANC president, he changed. Then suddenly everybody else that's against them, you see, they lost his hat or office as a president. So I'm concerned that from a leadership point of view, we really are shrugging our shoulders to say, we can't do it. Now, that's dangerous, because then, exactly like Herman said, you start finding blame. And so a lot of issues that have been very emotional nowadays, recently, suddenly will lose the emphasis, because now you jump on the bandwagon. Exactly the point. You're trying to get that little cake, and you're sharing it more and more and more. Okay, so it becomes exclusive completely.
So obviously we can look at technicalities in the State of the Nation address, but people can go read that anyway. So what you're touching on there is very important. You know, when the president does not give hope, when he does not create some level of confidence, and I want to, what is the balance between being realistic and expressing confidence and hope? I don't know if anyone knows the perfect answer to that. But when he does not do that, then people, that ripples into corporate, into business, everywhere, where everyone starts
just
believing.
On that point, being realistic, if indeed the speech was realistic, the president would have acknowledged that the country saw more than 200 billion, you know, wiped off the assets, the markets going down because of a decision that he had taken. That was nowhere in the speech. To say, you know, yes, we acknowledge that you've had, you know, three finance ministers within 4 days or something like that. It's a fundamental issue in terms of realism. We basically saw a speech that didn't address what had happened.
You see, remember our models are leadership again, that you face your negative perceptions. You can't get to the positive if you haven't got the guts. Like any entrepreneur will know this. You've got to be unafraid, but you don't get stuck in them. You acknowledge them, you admit your mistakes, and you get stuck into the solutions as well. And the spirit is lacking right now.
But you know what? A lot of people criticize exactly like this, or they feel these sentiments, and then they walk around the corner and they criticize the EFF. The truth is, most people probably feel, well, they have a damn good point. So when they rise like a Julius Malema and emotionally attacks the president and then takes his party out after Terry Lakota was politically...
I think just really look at Terry Lakota's statement. I mean, it was really so fundamental, so deep. I think you can see he's a broken man by what's really happening in the country. And it was so real and really touched I know personally I was in Parliament and really touched what Tara did and said. Because it's really so real that how do you expect a nation to really listen to a broken president like this? Someone with no real credibility, with no integrity.
Oh,
and really, you know, listen to him for 2 hours. But at the end of the day, you know what, I think from a dear perspective, sitting there listening, and really also grateful that our team stayed behind, because it really helped to really give South Africans an opportunity to realize that we have a bad leader. We have a wrong leader who's got absolutely nothing to actually tell this nation. Because if everybody else had walked out and they was not given the opportunity to deliver that hollow, empty speech, would still really be under impression as a country that we denied the president opportunity to outline his vision.
What was it like
in there? And look at how empty and hollow that speech was.
What was it like in there? So you were sitting there. I mean, outside it's quite dramatic, but in there it must be so frustrating.
Oh no!
Sitting for an hour there, just waiting for things to happen, must be very frustrating.
But I tell you, you know, Adrian, I really look at it. The EFF's disruptions, at least they were entertaining. At least they were entertaining. Sitting now for 2 hours thereafter, listening to the president of the nation. A nation that's bleeding, a nation that's despondent, and the president just really not saying anything. Literally, I believe the president really never said anything that would really inspire a discouraged, a despondent South African. I mean, really, at one point in time, raising an issue around moving centers of power, Pretoria and Cape Town. And this morning, I listened to Baleka Mbete saying a process like that is going to take at least 10 years. Why then raise it there in the speech? When he's sitting with one of the biggest, if not the biggest, cabinet. If you want, you see, as an organization, you need cost-cutting measures. The president would have said, you know what, South Africa, tomorrow I'm halving my cabinet.
Mm.
How many billions overnight you will save? Because the thing is, you can imagine, the smaller the cabinet, the more effective the government would really be. It's not just really about really saving the billions. Immediately, you can really demonstrate to South Africans that you're serious about cutting measures. And this is not about politicking, because you will immediately save billions of South Africans' taxpayers' money, firstly. And secondly, you'll have an efficient government, because the bigger the government, the bigger the bureaucracy.
Yeah, but Hammond, let's just be very realistic on that point about government. One recent statistic is that out of five people in this country is employed by government, because the government has become the last employer of last resort.
Yeah.
So you have the cabinet. Sure. How many people do you throw out of work?
Well, how are you going to pay for that civil service? We're sitting with 1.3 million civil servants in this country with the biggest cabinet. Now we've got to borrow money as a country to really pay for this. We've got 16 million South Africans on social grants. How are we going to fund this? And the cost of borrowing for this country is getting bigger and bigger. So I think it's a question of South Africans actually realizing that if we're not going to really do something about this Zuma presidency, this bus is going to collapse. I mean, you don't honestly have to really be a rocket scientist or be a brain surgeon or be an economist. You just really have to be a normal human being, understand that Zuma is actually the biggest risk to this country's future. If we continue having him in power and as a leader, then we must understand this country is going to collapse.
Okay, Jalubi, before you comment, someone asking a question here. Can the EFF's behavior be justified on WeChat? So if anyone wants to answer that, I mean, that's a matter of opinion. If you're EFF, you say yes.
That's an interesting question, because I was going to ask Hammond. You know, he's a politician now.
Civil servant.
There's an interesting word that he used, disruptions. So I wanted to know, at what point is EFF stand politicking and pragmatism?
Well, I think it's... It's actually quite difficult to really gauge and really give an informed answer to this complex issue, because honestly, I don't understand what is it that the EFF is trying to achieve, and only the EFF and Julius Malema can really be able to answer this. But the approach, as far as I'm concerned, was really very disruptive. You had Terra just came, stood there, and really made a very fundamental point. He did not really have to disrupt Parliament. He just really was there, delivered two, 3 minutes, but to really look at deeply was what that man actually communicated, made it really very clear. It wasn't about disruptions. EFF, I don't know, is it really looking for attention or what? But at the end of the day, do they have genuine complaints and issues? Absolutely, there's no doubt about it.
They do have policies and solutions.
It's just a question of approach. How do you really then approach when you have you faced with such a challenge?
Reinforce a leadership point again. It applies to all leaders out there. We get caught by the emotion, which we should. I mean, after all, this is the state of the nation. But from a leadership point of view, when a person lacks motivation and vision, then they build structure. And this is what happened also. The more you lack the vision and the leadership, the more you say, put the structure in place. That's why you need more structure to address racism. You need more structure to address whatever the challenges are out there. And this is because there's a lack of leadership.
Mm.
That's what happens. That's why it's such a bulky government, because there's a lack of leadership.
Okay, so that is the first half of our show. We'll continue the conversation, but zoom in a little bit more on our leader, Herman Mashaba, in the studio. But of course, we can't divorce him from some of these issues as we discuss where he is at, what keeps him occupied these days on the election campaign, which sounds very romantic, but I'm sure it's not that romantic in real life. So we're going to continue the conversation with Alice Myandu, Louis Groenewald, and Herman Mashaba, our special guest today. Stay tuned.
This is CliffCentral.com.